I'm a real deal. I'll shoot your liver out and hand it to you.
Day 47 of the shutdown. Anybody having cabin fever yet?
I have self-quarantined. I am 16 days in the house so far. Two times out, about half hour each time.
Yeah, I'm so introverted. I didn't even notice any difference until about yesterday.
Right, me too. Rob, I work alone at home.
Rob, we need you to stay
My
inside.
My best friend
too.
Is me, and I talk to myself all the time.
You're in that demographic.
I told my friends, I'm like, I haven't talked to anybody for 3 weeks or even left the house. And they said, oh, yeah, this lockdown is pretty tough. And I'm like, wait, what?
Right. Yeah. And I've worked out of my home for 10 years now. And that's a solitary thing.
Yep. We are, my wife is now working from home too. And we don't hardly leave too much either. The only time I ever leave is to go shoot
so
more
cool.
videos.
Don't you think, Nate, that people are able to do that?
I mean, when I was working back in like 1973, seemingly, I always worked from home from the start of my job to the end of my job. I had worked from home the entire time. It's nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Technology.
Yeah.
It does help.
It does. Well, I'm sure nobody cares about what we have going on in our lives right now. They only care about pool. So why don't we get started with pool? For full disclosure, it is March 31st. And tomorrow is the 1 year anniversary of the podcast.
Oh, happy birthday to us.
Woot.
Woof. Does it it doesn't seem like a year, does it, Rob?
We're just a year old? That's all?
We are just a year old. Our very first podcast came out on April 1st last year, and that's not even an April Fool's joke.
That's so exciting. I need a Kleenex.
It is. It's exciting times we live in, huh?
I got a little tear in my eye.
And so thank you so much to Jacoby Custom Cues, which I will still be working with in the future because I have become a vendor for them. So if you've ever been interested in any Jacoby Custom Cues products, you can always still reach out to me and I can get you the hookup and the details on anything and everything. So this is not an infomercial for myself, but just know that that's available. Cody's Q Therapy. I, again, will still be working closely with Cody in the future. He'll still probably be doing all of my Q work because I don't trust anybody else with it. At least not anybody else that is close and convenient for me to see regularly. So Cody is still going to be doing all of my personal Q work in the future, but as a sponsor, he will no longer be around. I don't think. Maybe. I guess I'll have to talk to him about that. Jeff Glaza's CBD for Life Global. Jeff Glaza was a big listener to the podcast in the beginning. I'm not 100% sure if he actually still does listen. But he has been very helpful with a lot of ideas for the podcast along the way. And I do truly appreciate talking to him and chatting with him about a lot of different things. CBD is not something that I personally really are interested in. It's just not my, I'm just not the demographic that is the customer for that. But if you dabble with that in any sort of way, of course, you can head over to CBDChangingLives.com, which is his website, and you can check out all of his products. And, you know, he's been a sponsor for the podcast for the last year. So I do appreciate that. And if this is a topic for you, and you are interested in CBD products, absolutely head over to that website and support him for supporting the podcast along the way. The Wisconsin Billiards Hall of Fame. I am still going to be working with the Wisconsin Billiards Hall of Fame in the foreseeable future because, you know, it's something that I truly, truly, truly do believe in. And it's a Wisconsin thing. And, you know, it's Wisconsin people sticking together. So that is going to be hanging around as a sponsor to the podcast. And we'll find out how and what that looks like in the future. But that will be hanging around. The Rock Sports Bar and Grill. Again, this is going to be one that's kind of hanging around because it's my pool room. And, you know, it's kind of Tom and Maria and I, we just kind of work together doing some things that mutually help each other out. And there's no money exchange between the two of us. We just kind of help each other out. So this is my pool room and I want to see him succeed. And do well in the future. So I will continue to support them, and I believe that they will continue to support me in the podcast. The IQ Practice Cue Ball. Thomas Van Eck, actually, I mean, if you've never seen this product, head over and follow him on Facebook. This product, actually, I do believe in. It is a pretty good product, and I use it to teach some of the lower level students that I work with from the college, or even all the way up into like the, you know, the mid 500-600 Fargos. There is something valuable to always striking the cue ball exactly where you're meaning to strike it, and the IQ Practice Cue Ball does do that in a very helpful way. So they're a pretty cheap investment, and they can help out your game quite a bit. It at least pointing out problems that you may not have known even existed. So this will be a plug for them. And it's a pretty cheap thing. Head over there and get one. If especially your English, you're having problems, you know, picking lines and, you know, doing kind of like the wheel drill. If that's something that you struggle with, the IQ Practice Cue Ball will definitely help. So head over there and get one of those if that's applicable to you. And then the last one is the Wisconsin Pool Players Society. And again, these guys are going to be hanging around. We kind of just, again, there's no money exchange between the two of us. We just kind of self-promote each other and help each other out along the way. So basically, they're going to be hanging around as well, but, you know, you shouldn't be hearing, you know, huge plugs or anything like that, because that's not what they want, and that's not what I want. So they will be hanging around as well. And then, again, that's another organization that I truly believe in and I really like. So I guess I'm saying I'm getting rid of all the sponsors, but most of them are kind of transitioning to a different style of, I guess, association, where we kind of just do things to mutually help each other out. So that's kind of where we're at with these. And so again, all the sponsors, or at least in some sort of fashion of sponsors, are gone as of right now, but they have been very helpful in the past as far as, you know, getting the podcast to where it is today. So any business you want to give them for doing that, absolutely head over to wherever they can be found and support them. From there, I will move on. And if you head over to the Facebook Cue It Up page for the podcast, I did a couple more videos yesterday, one on jumping. And it's basically just this was a suggestion from Terry Horton, and I thought it was a really good idea. So I basically just go through everything that I know about jumping and everything that I use to basically jump on every single shot just about. So I teach kind of what goes on with the shot, why you don't always get over, the biggest things to look for, and then a small little aiming technique that is extremely valuable when learning how to jump the balls. So that is on the Facebook page, and I also uploaded it to the YouTube page today. So you can head over there and watch that if you struggle with jumping or just want to get a couple more little insights on what I look for when I'm jumping. But other than that, I've been saying for a little while now that as of April 1st, there are going to be no more sponsors to the podcast. I will go through and thank all of the sponsors right now who have been working with us in the past year. So thank you so much to Jacoby Custom Cues, which I will still be working with in the future because I have become a vendor for them. So if you've ever been interested in any Jacoby Custom Cues products, you can always still reach out to me and I can get you the hookup and the details on anything and everything. So this is not an infomercial for myself, but just know that that's available. Cody's Cue Therapy. I, again, will still be working closely with Cody in the future. He'll still probably be doing all of my cue work because I don't trust anybody else with it. At least not anybody else that is close and convenient for me to see regularly. So Cody is still going to be doing all of my personal cue work in the future. But as a sponsor, he will no longer be around, I don't think. Maybe. I guess I'll have to talk to him about that. Jeff Glaza's CBD for Life Global. Jeff Glaza was a big listener to the podcast in the beginning. I'm not 100% sure if he actually still does listen. But he has been very helpful with a lot of ideas for the podcast along the way. And I do truly appreciate talking to him and chatting with him about a lot of different things. CBD is not something that I personally really are interested in. It's just not my, I'm just not the demographic that is the customer for that. But if you dabble with that in any sort of way, of course, you can head over to cbdchanginglives.com, which is his website, and you can check out all of his products. And, you know, he's been a sponsor for the podcast for the last year. So I do appreciate that. And if this is a topic for you, and you are interested in CBD products, absolutely head over to that website and support him for supporting the podcast along the way. The Wisconsin Billiards Hall of Fame. I am still going to be working with the Wisconsin Billiards Hall of Fame in the foreseeable future because, you know, it's something that I truly, truly, truly do believe in, and it's a Wisconsin thing, and, you know, it's Wisconsin people sticking together. So that is going to be hanging around as a sponsor to the podcast, and we'll find out how and what that looks like in the future, but that will be hanging around. This Rock Sports Bar and Grill, again, this is going to be one that's kind of hanging around because it's my pool room, and, you know, it's kind of Tom and Maria and I, we just kind of work together doing some things that mutually help each other out. And there's no money exchange between the two of us. We just kind of help each other out. So this is my pool room, and I want to see him succeed and do well in the future. So I will continue to support them, and I believe that they will continue to support me in the podcast. The IQ Practice Cue Ball. Thomas Van Eck, actually, I mean, if you've never seen this product, head over and follow him on Facebook. This product, actually, I do believe in. It is a pretty good product, and I use it to teach some of the lower level students that I work with from the college, or even all the way up into like the, you know, the mid 500-600 Fargos. There is something valuable to always striking the cue ball exactly where you're meaning to strike it, and the IQ Practice Cue Ball does do that in a very helpful way. So they're a pretty cheap investment, and they can help out your game quite a bit. It at least pointing out problems that you may not have known even existed. So this will be a plug for them, and it's a pretty cheap thing. Head over there and get one. If especially your English, you're having problems, you know, picking lines and, you know, doing kind of like the wheel drill, if that's something that you struggle with, the IQ Practice Cue Ball will definitely help. So head over there and get one of those if that's applicable to you. And then the last one is the Wisconsin Pool Players Society. And again, these guys are going to be hanging around. We kind of just, again, there's no money exchange between the two of us. We just kind of self-promote each other and help each other out along the way. So basically, they're going to be hanging around as well. But, you know, you shouldn't be hearing, you know, huge plugs or anything like that, because that's not what they want and that's not what I want. So they will be hanging around as well. And then, again, that's another organization that I truly believe in and I really like. So I guess I'm saying I'm getting rid of all the sponsors, but most of them are kind of transitioning to a different style of, I guess, association, where we kind of just do things to mutually help each other out. So that's kind of where we're at with these. And so, again, all the sponsors, or at least in some sort of fashion of sponsors, are gone as of right now. But they have been very helpful in the past as far as, you know, getting the podcast to where it is today. So any business you want to give them for doing that, absolutely head over to wherever they can be found and support them. And other than that, so I put out on the queued up discussion page a post basically saying, you know, if we could get third party sponsors in here, you know, Harry's Razor, ZipRecruiter, something like that. Would any of the listeners be opposed to hearing that? So maybe in the middle of the podcast, beginning and something like that, having a couple sponsors for the podcast, that would be a good start towards making this more full-time and sustainable. And I posted that onto the queued up discussion page, basically asking if anybody is strongly against it and would ruin the experience of the podcast. And most people, actually, I think everybody said that it was perfectly okay. So if anybody out there that isn't part of the queued up discussion group, if you're strongly opposed to this in any sort of way, reach out and let me know why. Other than that, in the near future, I think that's probably going to be a thing. And that's just going to be, I think, really pivotal to the sustainability of the podcast over the long term. But so that's basically all for that. The next announcement is going to be, so in the past week or so, I have been doing raffles for pool halls in my area. So I have a very close working relationship with Brandon Jacoby from Jacoby Custom Cues, and we have worked out a deal where basically we are able to give huge, huge margins on really, really, really nice custom cues, some higher-end custom cues, and basically I've been raffling them off with the Powerball raffles in the state of Wisconsin, and then I send the money over to the pool halls. This isn't about me, but this is basically saying that if you have any pool halls in your area that may or may not be questionable to make it through this. I know we actually lost one pool hall in Wisconsin already, Claus Billiards. Have you heard anything like that in Minnesota, Demetrius, about any pool halls there closing down?
Not yet, but man, this has been hard on everybody.
It is super tough on the pool halls. So, you know, it's not a huge amount of money, but I was able to send the Rock Sports Bar and Grill a $1,500 in over PayPal this week, which is pretty cool. You know, that it's not obviously probably going to be make or break for a pool hall, but it's probably really helpful when you have
pay the light bill for a month.
Yeah, when you still have the bills coming in. So this is basically all of this is to say this is going to be an option for you guys as well. Anybody out there who has a pool hall that, you know, you may need to keep open and this you're looking for ways to help out, this could be an option. I worked out a deal with Brandon, and I'm taking absolutely zero profit from any of this. It's just I'm playing middleman between Brandon Jacoby and Jacoby Custom Cues and your pool hall or your raffle for it. So if you think that you could get a raffle done in your area through one of your groups and you wanted to do that and send the money over to your pool hall to help sustain them during this time, absolutely reach out to me, Demetrius, Rob, anybody for the podcast. And, you know, you'll eventually get in contact with me and we'll figure out how we can make it happen. And it won't take an investment. You don't have to buy it up front. So it's basically just going to be, I send you pictures of cues that you can raffle. You use those to raffle them off. At the end of it, you send the profits to the pool halls that, you know, you're trying to help sustain, and then pay for the small amount of the cue that it's going to be. I shouldn't say small amount because a lot of these are, you know, pretty big amounts still because they're huge cues or really expensive cues. But you pay for the cues once all the money's in, and then we ship it out to whoever the winner is. So it's a pretty easy process. We've been doing it in Wisconsin. We've already ran, I think we're up to 5 of them now for different pool halls throughout Wisconsin. So they're going really successfully here. And, you know, it's a potential good thing for some pool halls in your area if they need it. So that's an option if you would like it to be. Also, so that'll wrap up all of the announcements in the beginning. We can move on to our shout outs now. I will go first then. How about that? But my shout is going to be to Ong Vang. And anybody from Wisconsin, you probably or at least potentially know who Ong Vang is. But so I just basically got off the rant about the raffles. And Ong Vang bought 2 spots in my raffle and 2 spots in another raffle. They both finished the same night. Ong picks the same numbers every single time. So Ong Vang picked the number 40, and that was the winning Powerball number that went off on both of our raffles. So Ong basically won my $2,500 Jacoby Custom Q, and he won Kendall Cook's, which the Mad Apple in Appleton, he won his $2,000 custom Jacoby Q in the same raffle. He won $4,500 in Qs. This is the kicker. This is the kicker. This is where it gets good. How lucky is he, right? He donated both of those cues back. He didn't.
Oh,
he,
nice.
He took $50 for both of them, which wasn't even his investment for them. He had more than double that into his raffle tickets for this.
Oh, nice, nice.
And
donation
he donated
there.
Both of them back to the pool room owners to be able to raise more money with. So I was actually even able to send Maria the Rock $3,300 after selling her cue afterwards. So because Ong, who won both of these raffles, didn't want either Q and would rather help sustain pool in Wisconsin by giving them back to the owners to make more money with. Demetrius, do you have anybody in your state that would do something like that?
No, I'm more I'm not as Robin Hood. I'm more sheriff of Nottingham myself.
That is crazy, right? And the Qs were
really big.
Absolutely
that's really
gorgeous. I wouldn't have done that. No way. No way. These cues were so gorgeous. I wanted them. I was like so selfish. I didn't even buy any raffles in it because I thought it doesn't look good if I win my own raffle probably. So I figured that would be a bad idea. But yeah, I wanted these cues so bad. They're so beautiful. And he donates them both back. How cool is that?
Well, he deserves the shout out. That's for sure.
Yeah. So on gets.
He maybe deserves maybe we could have a shout out of the year.
Yeah, this
or start off the new our 1 year anniversary with the best shout out ever so far.
You know, that's almost a decent idea. Do you think it'd be valuable to have like a queue it up person of the year?
Might, yeah.
I don't know, man. It's the problem is we've had so many people that have stepped up in such big ways.
Yeah.
I feel like to choose one would almost be, you know, it would just, it's really hard. It would almost diminish others more than it would prop up the one.
That's a way to look at it.
This has been a team effort, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's something we can maybe think about in the future. But in the near term, Ong, you get the shout out. That is just incredible, man. It really is incredible.
That's a tough one to follow, but I'll shout out to a friend of mine I've known for, I guess, 15 years or so now, Mr. Matt Lind. Matt Lind, he's local here in the Minneapolis area. Yeah, so
three cushion player.
Yeah, he plays three cushion. I met him. He started a straight pool league in Minneapolis a long time ago and ran that for a while. So he's, you know, anybody that plays three cushion and straight pool, it kind of tells the story of, being kind of a pool purist and nut, and along the way, you know, he's really done a lot of things to help me out as I get rolling with some things, whether it's a little bit of, web and tech help and just, different things to support me as I've kind of gotten into this pool coaching and stuff and on the podcast here. So he knows how to help me through, and he's really been generous with his time and supporting what I've done. So I wanted to shout out to Matt Lind. If you're listening, thank you very much.
Yeah, he has certain exceptional skills in his three cushion game. Does a few things as good as anybody I've seen, and one of them is his double the rail technique, either on the short side of the table or the long side. But short sides, his percentage of scoring points is probably 90% or better. And it's remarkable. He just every time he gets one, if you want to think a little bit of defense in three cushion, and you're playing certain people, there's some shots you shouldn't leave them. Well, if you're playing Matt Lind, don't leave him a double the rail shot.
he will
score on you.
I've had a number of times where I've showed up at the billiard club at 6 or 7 at night to play him a game or two, and ended up going home at 9 in the morning. Yeah, that can happen.
Mm. Yeah, and I was impressed with his energy. His energy and his IT skills too, but because he streamed the last tournament at the Three Cushion Club in Minneapolis, and live streamed from one of the tables, which was really cool. But his energy level while he's playing is intense. It's fun to play him as a competitor. I enjoy playing intense players, and he is one. And it was fun. I spent a little time talking with him, and he came in. I don't know where he came in that tournament. It was 10 in the tournament. I came in 9th. I think Matt was maybe 6th. I'd have to check on that. But I did want to say this that I didn't mention when I was talking about that three cushion tournament. I mentioned John Logan as being the only player to beat Freddie Lammers, 25-24. He cashed in the tournament, which was 4th place. John did. What I failed to mention was Mike Miller, who comes down from Duluth to play, missed getting 4th place by 1 billion. All in all, everything even.
Well, it's tough. That's tournament.
Nine
that's
matches,
tournament play. Yeah.
1 billion. Separated 4th and 5th, the money or not. Hmm. I mean, how many? It's just so cool. Billiards is so cool the way they score in tournaments, the way they can do it because there's so few people playing. It's not like 150 people in a tournament. You know, it's 10 or 20 or 30.
Well, and I can give a shout out to Matt too because he sent me an email a long time ago when I was in Punta Cana for my wedding, and I didn't respond to him until he yelled at Rob to yell at me.
Right. He did not yell at me. He just said,
he screamed
a response. And I says, well,
Rob, it's my story, and I'm going to tell it exactly how I want
Nate's
to.
Nate's busy. I said, no, you just included me in your story, though, so I have to justify what you just said.
Actually,
well, no, you're
I
not
think...
kicking me out of the conversation that easy, buddy.
Actually, what I think Nate said to Rob about Matt. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just jumping in now.
Yeah, go ahead.
Just for thought.
Yeah, maybe you can straighten this all out for us.
Oh, man.
This is where we're at. All right, Rob, give us your shout-out.
Oh, man, there's so many. My shout-out is to the owners of the Top Hat Tavern in Superior. This is a pool hall tavern combo. And Wendy Shaleen and Jeff Shaleen are the owners of the Top Hat. There is an upcoming tournament. It is called the Gary Galliford Memorial Tournament. And they take over 100 players for this, I believe. Race to three on, was going to be played on Valleys. Now, I don't know what's going to happen because, of course, the bar is closed. Temporarily, I think they maybe changed the date on it, and they got a new date, but it's still going to be held if they can do it this year. They were planning, before this virus thing happened, purchasing all new, brand new diamond tables for their Top Hat Tavern pool room. And they do have a 10-foot Brunswick billiard table at the Top Hat also, in a separate area up on a stage, like. Very nice. Great place to go. And when everything gets back to normal, I'm going to recommend that everybody goes there and gets in these tournaments, fill up, that they have up there. A lot of players from northern Minnesota, and Canada come and play. So that's my shout-out. Thank you very much.
All right. That's a good one.
Yeah.
All right. So that is all of the shout-outs. Let's move on to the amazing content we have to talk about, which is basically nothing. Let's pick up where we left off. So this is normally a segment where we talk about everything that happened in the previous week. And let's have let's do that right now. Okay, we're all done. We're all caught up.
That was fun.
Yeah, we're all caught up. That was fun. That was amazing. Basically, nothing's happened. But I will say that there are a lot of really neat ideas that have happened from this past week of being shut down. And a couple of the things that I've been seeing around Facebook and all of the other social medias is we now have this infatuation with playing the ghost, which is always a fun thing to do. Whether it is, you know, just straight up the ghost. Some people I've seen are playing God, which is a variation of the ghost where you break and run or you lose. You don't get the ball in hand after the break. And if you break dry, you lose. So that's playing God. The ghost is where you break the balls and take ball in hand and try to run out. And if you do, you get a point. If not, the ghost gets a point. And I've also seen some variations of like playing the ghost where you get the first shot after the break, but you get no ball in hand. You know, there's a bunch of different variations depending on where your skill level is. And if you're a lower skilled player, maybe a beginner or something like that, you could also play the ghost, but you get two ball in hands. So you break the balls, take your first ball in hand. And then whenever you get yourself in trouble, if you get yourself in trouble, you can at any point in time grab the cue ball and take one more ball in hand and try to run out from there. So there's a bunch of different variations that you could do. And all of them, you know, try to challenge yourself, of course, but, you know, see what you can do if you have access to a pool table. The ghost is always a fun way to, you know, kind of challenge your skills and put them out there in a, it's as close as you can get to a tournament type situation without having a tournament type situation, I guess. Anybody want to?
That's kind of an important thing in practice. How do you simulate the stress you feel? And
yeah, there's a couple of variations of ghost I'll throw out there, just things that I think have been good. Is especially, you know, if you're not sure what level or if whatever, one thing that's kind of fun to do, because the danger of playing the ghost is that you can kind of get into this, I don't know, you can lose your focus on every rack and just feel like, say you're up, you're playing the ghost to seven, you know, you're up 5-1, you know, you get a tough layout, you might just kind of, whatever. So one thing I kind of like to do is there's a progressive ghost where you play rotation, you know, throw three balls on the table, run them in order. If you run out, you go to four balls. If you run out again, you go to five balls. If you mess up, you go back to three balls. And so you end up playing kind of like in a headset where every time you run out, you add a ball. Every time you fail, you take a ball off. And then you challenge yourself to see how many balls. It's kind of like juggling, I guess. Like, how many balls can you earn your right to shoot? Can you get up to, you know, where you've run all the way up to where you've got 10 or 11 balls on the table? You know, you got to, you know, whatever. So that's a fun way to kind of challenge yourself. Another one that I kind of like, I do like, you know, for different skill levels, I think it's important to know, yeah, the two ball in hands, the one ball in hand, or even just playing, like you say, playing God or something where it's like, whatever. So, but I also like sometimes playing against a certain layout. So, for example, say you play the nine ball ghost and, you know, you split sets. Maybe you get a layout where the balls look open. They look runnable, but there's a few awkward transitions and you're not necessarily sure the right way. Or there's a couple, you know, you're going to have to move the cue ball and play short side for a ball off the side rail. past the side pocket. It's going to be in some transitions, and it's a run out that you're not very comfortable with. If you just shoot the thing and miss and move on to the next and hope for an easier layout, that's where I feel like you're missing something. Like, what about marking all those balls where the balls are, 1 through 9? It's runnable, but it's not easy. And now you play a race to 7 against just that layout, mm-hmm. where you just set those balls up again and again, and you're playing mm-hmm. against that one layout. That way you really get to learn that layout, and if you're not winning against it, practice those transitions, practice the 2 to the 3, practice the shot up the rail, kind of learn the course, if you will. Like, what is the, what is it going to take to get through this rack? Practice a few of those transitions. What if you get flat on this ball? What if you get thin on that ball? What would be the right way to play it? And then when you practice that, you feel like, okay, I've practiced these transitions. I know this run. Now go ahead and play your race to 7 again and see how you like it. So I think you get a lot more out of that than just kind of raking the balls and kind of, you got to stay engaged. So those are some of the things I've done to kind of make sure that I'm still engaged.
Yeah, I think I do that in 3 cushion now when I practice. Because if you're playing the systems and the numbers, wherever the ball, you can put them back really in exactly the same spot. And there's only 3 balls you got to mess with. But I'll just put those balls, I'll just put them back and shoot it as many times as I need to so I don't miss it.
So I like the Ghost Challenge. Thank you, Nate.
Yeah. For sure. And if you have access to a table, absolutely try it out. And, I think that this could be a fun thing for us to do as well. If you're playing the Ghost, tag the podcast, tag the Cue It Up podcast. We can share it. If we like it, we can share it to the page and we can have everybody watch it. But regardless, we'll be able to watch it as a community. And, I've been watching a little bit of some of the people that I've seen that I'm friends with from the podcast chime in every now and then and give some feedback or whatever. It's fun to see these things. We have nothing better to do in our lives these days than, watch some pool matches. So absolutely, if you're playing matches still, tag the podcast every time you go live. We would love to be able to see it. And I think the other listeners to the podcast would like to see it too. So other than that, there is one other really neat format that I've seen, and it's kind of a variation of this. So I wanted to talk about the Ghost concept first. There are actually pool tournaments that are being ran now that are isolated pool tournaments where you actually pay $20 or $40, whatever the entry fee is, and then you play against the Ghost in a tournament style format. So you play against somebody else, whatever you play, 8 to 10 racks, whatever it is, against the Ghost, and whatever your score is, you play that against your opponent. And if you play 9 racks against the Ghost and you run out 7 of them and your opponent runs out 3 of them, the person who ran out 7 moves on just as if it was a race to 7 in a pool tournament and the final score was 7-3. So you play a fixed number of games, and then whoever has the most wins against that Ghost moves on. And it's a standard double elimination tournament, or, there's variations. You could do single elimination out of those, but I've seen a couple of those pop up, and those are, just a really cool idea. And I think that those, there's a lot of people that could organize stuff like this with your friends that still has pool tables or whatever. It gets a little funny, of course, with different table sizes, different pocket sizes. I played on the table I was playing on yesterday that anybody was watching was, oh, that table was just kicking my butt. It's a 9-footer on 4 1/4 pockets. It's just so tight, and there's just no room for any error at all on that table. So obviously you have a table like that, it's going to be a lot tougher than somebody who has a 7-foot valley with 27-inch pockets. But, it's a fun thing to do, and generally speaking, it's a small investment to have some fun with people that you may not know. So that's another pretty neat idea for anybody who is a doer and wants to organize something like that.
No, I think it's a great idea. I saw that actually at 2017, I was at the U.S. Open, and there was at Q Masters, there was somebody there that was trying to get people set up on that. And, they were trying to recruit people nationwide to play in their Ghost tournaments. And I got the flyer, and then I got this camera from them that could set up. And because you have to live, stream it for them so that they know that you're not just cutting and pasting your 10 best runouts of all time. And so, unfortunately, I got it. I was kind of excited to try it. But in terms of technology, just trying to figure out how to hook up that camera and live stream it, I couldn't figure it out. So maybe I should call Matt Lind back and get that thing going.
Matt'll help because that
kind of plays to my strengths. If I have to break and pocket balls and control the cue ball, the one ball, and then, possibly win a safety battle against top players to get control of the table and come with a hard shot, those, I might not do well. But if I get to break the balls open and pick up the cue ball and put it where I want it, more often than not, good things happen for me. So it's probably stacked in my favor if I can ever figure out. The hardest part for me is going to be to figure out how to plug in the camera.
That is a tough thing to do.
But that's okay. Yeah. They wouldn't think that pool players would actually cheat, would they?
Ask me about the round robin tournament they did in the Seminole down in Florida that time. I'll tell you some funny stories about what happens when you get pool players in a round robin format. Anyway.
Oh, sure. And you don't want somebody else to win that you just don't like?
I'll tell you what, man. The first few rounds, the scores
were
six. Because
you see this happening.
Tell you what, the first few rounds were 5-4, 5-5, 6-4, 5-5, and all of a sudden the last round there was a lot of 9-1s all of a sudden. So
isn't that something? Oh, yeah. That son of a gun beat me. I'll make sure he don't get in the last five.
Yeah.
I'll just throw this match.
So I guess that's pretty much all we have to talk about as far as what's happened, because nothing's happened. So. Those are some pretty good ideas for things that you could do to keep entertained. And I guess with that, we can move on to what's coming up, because we do have something to talk about there. So, as of yesterday, there was a matchup announced between Tyler Steyer and Chris Robinson. And this is 10-Ball Winner Breaks Race to 100 Challenge. It is being free live streamed by On the Wire Creative Media. So maybe I'll try to do some sort of commentary for that. If I can figure it out from now until then, maybe I can do something for the podcast community. But even if I don't do it, I will have a watch party set up for all of the listeners, because it's free to Facebook. So we can set up a live stream, and if you want to join it and chat with the hosts, Rob and Demetrius and myself and everybody else in the community, I think we're building a really, really cool community with the listeners to the podcast. So they all seem to be really, really cool people and engaging and fun and have great questions. So let's try to build a community with the podcast, especially with these watch parties. And if you're a listener to the podcast, come over and hang out with us. So we will do that. This is April 10th through the 12th, which I guess is still a little ways away. So we'll probably actually talk about this next week too. And let's talk about it in depth next week, because there might be a few more details that are going to be announced from now until then. So we won't go too in depth right now, but they're playing it in California. I talked to Chris via Messenger, and he said it's in some warehouse or something. There's only going to be a few people there, but it's happening in California somewhere. Not totally sure where.
Yeah, that's where Chris is from, right?
Yeah, yep. So did anybody want to say any thoughts about this initially without going too in-depth?
Variation with Tyler and Chris?
I think Chris is 24, and I think Tyler's 26 or 27, 26.
So they're pretty close to age.
Yeah. Yeah. And they've played a bunch in the past. And I think I think this is actually going to be the third time that they've matched up and played against each other. And Chris Robinson's won the previous two, I think. Or maybe this is
How long ago was that?
Oh, it's been a couple of years. Actually, I think this is going to be the fourth time. I think Chris won it twice, and I think Tyler won once. If I'm not
mistaken. I didn't know about their history, so that makes it very interesting to see this one.
Yeah, I might be wrong on that. I think I'm right though. I think this is going to be the fourth time, and I think it's 2-1 Chris right now. Did we have any initial thoughts without going too in depth?
Well, I mean, it seems like Tyler's. Listen, they're both playing great. They're both playing great. They're both playing full time. They're both running out like a boss. But Tyler has proven that. While he's not considered one of the elite players in the world, I think that he's proven that he is, he won that, the Kremlin tournament last year. He's done well, I know it wasn't his best year in 2019 on the Moscone Cup, but he earned his way onto the team both years. And in 2018, as far as I'm concerned, he won us the Moscone Cup by winning us the first round over Neil Stain and coming with that amazing combo on the Hill to get us on the board.
Yeah.
I've seen Tyler, he's really come on. And I think that even his performance I can't remember if it was the World Championships or the Diamond Championships last year, the 10-ball. But anyway, I've seen him play 10-ball with the best players in the world and get there again and again. And I just feel like at this point, it's nothing against Chris. I just think that Tyler's playing he's knocking on the door of breaking into a very, very, very small group of top 10 ball players. His break is phenomenal. He has his elevated game, his jump shots, his hard shots, and then just the way he runs through the racks, fundamentals, pattern play. I mean, he's really got all the tools working. They're starting to peak out. So I think it would be hard for anybody to beat him in a race to 100 that's not absolutely elite. And Chris, it's going to be a tough match for him. But, you know, he's hungry. He's fearless. And Chris, the one thing about him is he's not intimidated. He's calling a shot. He knows where he wants to go. And he's looking at playing Tyler as an opportunity to get, to earn the right to get himself into that conversation as well. And so it's impressive that he has a winning track record against Tyler. I think Tyler's playing very, very strong right now. I think it favors Tyler, but Tyler's not untouchable, and Chris is a heck of a good player. So it's, you'll have to see what happens on the table.
I was kind of impressed watching Tyler actually lose a match to Oi in this last big tournament that they played. And what impressed me with his losing the match was, well, he got unlucky is the way he lost, basically, on the break. But his demeanor while he's watching, well, because the camera goes over and, spies the competitor, how they're handling everything. And the way that he dealt with, that's extreme adversity, being down 4-0 or 5-0 and had bad luck 3 times and is only 3 turns to the table. It was very bad luck to start with. And really, he was settled with that. What happened to him wasn't affecting him in any way that I could tell at all while he was watching the match go on, while he was watching his opponent win rack after rack and run out and not make any mistakes. A lot of guys would be squirming around a little in their chair, kind of getting a little antsy with this whole situation, not liking it at all. And it wasn't that he was probably not liking it, but he just was handling it. You know what I'm saying? And you could tell, you could see he was, this is the way you normally would feel, and he was getting a grip on that and not letting that affect him so that when he did get to the table, it wasn't going to be an issue, that whatever the score was. And when he did get a chance, when he did do something, he made a bad choice in the rack that he did win, but he got out, perfectly, I would say, in the game. It's going to be a great, great matchup. I'm excited about it, actually.
Yeah, I'm particularly not talking about the match at all. I'm pretty excited for this match. One, because, we're just so, unquenched with our pool content right now. There's a lot of amateurs doing stuff out there, and that's, I love seeing that stuff. It's definitely really cool, but, it's there's only so much high school football that you can watch before you want some NFL, figuratively speaking. And, this is what we get, and it's awesome, and I'm really excited for it. Plus, I would consider myself friends with both of them, Tyler especially. I've known Tyler for years. Chris, I would consider, getting to the point where I would consider him a friend, and I would like to think that it's probably mutual, but I'm super excited just because, I'm keen to both of these players. I think they're the future of U.S. pool, and, they're going to be, I think they're both going to be making Moscone Cups for years to come, and they're both pretty classy individuals as far as on and off the tables with respecting their opponents. They're both absolutely fearless on the table and off the table. I'm pretty excited to see what this match turns into. We're a long ways away out from it still, but I'm excited for the match, and I think next week we'll talk more in depth on it and what we think will actually happen in the match, but I guess that's pretty much all I have on it for right now. So we can move on to the rest of the podcast. We don't really have a ton to talk about, obviously. That's been pretty evident throughout the podcast thus far, but we'll just kind of talk about random stuff here and see where it takes us. So, Rob, you had something that you wanted to start with?
Okay, well, we'll start with nothing. I'm gonna throw this out to Demetrius. He's like the encyclopedia for us of professional players. I want to ask him about stance at the table, your position of your feet at the table. And what I see the snooker table style of stance, which is wide open to the facing the table. Your legs are apart, straddled, and then there's the boxer style of stance. There's two basic styles. Now, nobody's ever told me why that is and what reason there is for that and why it's mainly either the British, European, or snooker players who have that more open style, whether it's a trend, something they just did, or whether there's a value, a specific value to it while for shooting, for pocketing balls.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is a, I will tell you right now, this is a very, there's a lot that goes into this, and I'm not an encyclopedia. When it comes to fundamentals and equipment, as an instructor, I'm probably less interested in fundamentals and equipment than anyone else I know that likes pool, because I'm more of a take. It's not a game of making yourself perfect. It's a game of taking a bunch of broken pieces and then finding a way to put them together in the heat of battle and getting a job done. And that's to me what pool's about. So I just have to preface this. Anybody that's listening that knows a lot about these things, I'll tell you what I know. I know that, of course, the snooker players stand more addressing towards the table. You know, their feet are more side by side and their hips are towards the table. And then they kind of, you know, face the shot. Whereas the traditional pool stance, you've got your left, you know, well, assuming you're left-handed, you've got your left foot, your lead foot way out in front, and you're more turned away, you know, sideways or perpendicular to the shot line, parallel to the shot line. You're turned away from the table. And so what the problem with that is, as a pool player, one of the challenges is that you have, in order to bend into the shot, you kind of have to twist around, your body's twisting around, and your neck is kind of twisting around. And so that can make it difficult to, you know, to address the ball. It's not a very natural, it's a little unnatural. It can be a little bit of tension or a little bit of fighting your body to get down to the shot. But with the benefit of the pool stance is that when you have your front foot and your back foot separated, then that creates like a body clearance for your cue to swing. And also it seems like it allows you more room to generate a big swing. You're standing back a little bit further from the table sometimes. So you have more room to swing your cue, get accelerating, things like that. So I think the pool stance has developed because, you know, when people are playing nine ball in games where they're powering the cue ball around, having to shoot, you know, break shots and having to shoot with a lot of power, that longer stance has traditionally been able to generate the power. The snooker players, you know, that's all about mostly about accuracy of cueing. And so they've traditionally squared towards the table where they can really get down and sight the ball comfortably, sight the ball well. Now I think what's happened is in the last 10, 20 years, especially, and in part because the European players have really influenced the game, I feel like the stances today are more hybrid, where they found a way now to where they can kind of square more towards the table with a more European style snooker stance. But still, the difference that I've seen, and maybe I'm wrong on this, so I'm open to feedback, but instead of keeping your 2 feet closely aligned, so if I'm standing towards the table, if I'm facing the table, and I'm a left-handed player, my left foot is slightly out in front. Instead of having my left foot and right foot nearly on the same line side by side facing the table, they seem to be the left foot. It's got that combination where you're squared off towards the table, but your left foot is actually out in front a little bit so that you're facing the table. However, you still have a little bit more of a longer stance, a little bit more room for swing and power. So I've seen this in the Chinese eight ball and in the European players. And a lot of players are going to this where it's kind of a hybrid. You're facing the table more. Your left foot is not directly in between your right foot and the table. It's still off diagonally out in front of you, but it's diagonally in front of you. It's not to your side. So it kind of allows for the accuracy, getting your body forward, addressing the shot, but still giving your arm room for clearance and giving yourself enough room for a big swing. So that's kind of what I've seen things go to. And I think that's generally the best of both worlds. But what do you guys think? Am I on the right track with that? Or
I'm in your camp. I could not care less about especially your lower body when it comes to mechanics. I mean, as long as you're not falling over on your stance, I could care less if you're standing on one leg. It's it's all about having the mechanics to be able to create a reproducible swing. So your legs have almost nothing to do with that. And
well, the question wasn't about whether anybody cared about this or not. The question was, what is the physical reason why?
Yeah.
What, as far as the game goes, as far as cueing goes, I think Demi, I think you got that. I think you got that answer, because it's the cueing properties versus the striking properties of the stroke, or power of the stroke, or whatever you want to say, the power players. You know, that was always what I thought. Nine ball, you got snooker, which was a finesse game, and then you got nine ball, which is a kind of a power game.
Right, right. But I think I think the reason why it is important to talk about why it, I think it's interesting that both Nate and I feel this way, and I think it is important because what I'm concerned about, and what a lot of people don't realize when it comes to fundamentals, is that if you're spending a lot of time and energy tinkering with your stance, then number one, if it's not a good return on your time and effort, that's good to know that, like, Nate and I might be like, yeah, you know what? And we're not the only ones. I've had some players, you know, Mark Wilson, who's religious about the stance. There are some players that are absolutely like, there is a way to play pool, and this is the way to play pool. And if you want to play pool, you have to play it like this. But I think a lot of players feel this way, which is find something comfortable, make it work, especially when it comes to stances, bridges, things that are not, you know, maybe the stroke. There are some things about the stroke. But the other problem, and one thing I will tell you guys, I want to warn the listeners about stance, is that when you start messing with your stance, or I suppose you could say this about any fundamental, fundamentals are all interconnected. So one thing, you can't necessarily change one thing without sending ripples through all the other things. So what I mean by that is, if you change your stance, and I have done this because I used to be, I have changed my stance a little bit over the years, like one time. I don't mess with it much, but one time I changed it up a little bit. And it created some difficulties because it can change your sighting, but it can also change how far you stand away from the table. So if you start messing with your stance, say you're a pool player and you've got your left leg way out, your back leg way back, and you've got this spread eagle, you know, whatever. And then you're like, you know what? I want to play like the snooker player. So you start playing and changing your stance. Well, you know, you get down, you shoot a few shots. You're like, oh, that feels good. I can see that. I can get on the ball good. But what you might not realize is maybe you're standing 4 inches closer to the table than you used to because your back foot's further closer. And all of a sudden, you've been staring at the cue ball for 10 years a certain way. You've been sighting your shots a certain way. And now, this is something I've seen, Rob, where when you look at a shot, you have to go back and forth between your eyes, between the cue ball and the object ball. And so what happens is that if you're further from the table, then you can have the cue ball and the object ball are both out in front of you in the field of vision to where you can see both balls clearly just by moving your eyes, not moving your head. But when what happens is if you get too close to the table where you're looking down at the cue ball, then it ends up being some strain where you don't, you know, you're looking down at the cue ball, then you have to like strain your head up to look at the object ball. You don't have them both out in front of you in your field of vision, and it can cause you to lose the line of the shot and not see the shot the same way as you're used to seeing it. So this is one thing I've seen when I adjusted my stance, is that it changed how far I was standing from the table. It changed how I sighted the ball, the size of the cue ball and what part of the cue ball, just how you aim. All these little things are interconnected, and I don't like messing with any of it, because if you mess with one piece, I shouldn't say I don't like messing with any. If there's a very good reason, if your stance is causing you problems, and what I would say is to anybody thinking about making fundamental changes, here's my litmus test. If you look at other players at your ability, if you're able to do 9 out of 10 things that they can do, you can break as well as them, you can jump as well as them, you can shoot as straight as them, but there's, you know, maybe a certain type of shot, like maybe on elevated shots, for whatever reason, you're at like 30% of the make percentage that they are. You know, they can all make elevated shots, but for whatever reason, you just seem like anytime you're elevated, it's just not working. And so the players at your level that you can keep up with in almost every other skill, if there's a specific area that you're way, way underperforming in, well, then I think it's okay to look at that and say, hey, I have physical evidence to suggest that I'm missing something about this shot. Or maybe, you know, Nate just came up with a jump video. Same thing with the jumps. You know, it's like if there's something specific. But if you're at a similar level to everybody else at your speed and you can kind of do the same things, then to think that the answer lays in tinkering with fundamentals, it's like, unless I have strong evidence to suggest, that there's something physically wrong that's holding me back at a specific area, I generally stay away from messing with fundamentals.
I agree with everything you just said, except for the back elbow. I think that you would exclude that from your mechanics statement. Right,
it's very, very, very funny you say this, because I got an email from somebody yesterday, and this is true, absolutely true, unrehearsed. This is absolutely true. I had a guy send me a picture of himself, and his elbow was not on the shot line. And he said that he got feedback from somebody saying that he should get his elbow on a shot line. And I gave him the whole disclosure I just gave. But then I said, if there's one thing that I think is important, I do think that when it comes to stroke and when it comes to the stroke, you know, the alignment of your arm, that is the one thing that I do think that is worthy of working on, because, you know, it's nice to have the elbow on the stroke line so that your cueing arm can dangle naturally straight down. And when you pull your arm back, if you just let gravity do its job, it's swinging directly towards the line of the shot, and you're not having to use muscle to support it as it's kind of off the track.
Oh, my God.
So it's very funny that you bring that up, because that is the one exception. When it comes to stroke, I think we should all be working at our stroke.
It's really, really, really funny that you would say that, because that literally is going to be my tip for today, which I will get to in a little bit. But dang it, this is a small world. All right. I'm going to hold off on saying anything else until my tip, because I'm still using it.
All right. I got a question for you again, Demi, and of your all the students you've had there and your boot camps and stuff. And one of the things, when I could see somebody was just having trouble relaxing, and their stroke seemed to be forced. So they're actually stroking with their whole arm and shoulder. And I would just hold my arm out to the side like I'm stroking, only stand and look at them. And then I would just let my hand dangle. And then I'd take my other hand and slap my hand so that my forearm, my hand and forearm from the elbow down was like a pendulum. And it would just rock back and forth. The force of my slapping from the other hand rocked it like it was just limp and dead.
Right.
And how many people couldn't do that? It was like very few, like 10% of the people I've exposed to this, doing this, can't do it. Their whole arm moves. And I think that's kind of key in being able to stroke a pool cue, is that you don't do it with your shoulder or upper arm. You do it with your forearm.
Yeah, what I do in my coaching is I have them get in the stance, and then I take a sharp knife and hold it against the edge of their shoulder. So if they jerk forward, they'll end up cutting themselves open. And I have them. They learn. This is boot camp. Man, we don't play around.
Got a hammer out over their head.
And I'll tell you what, I think you've really hit on something, because what I found, you guys let me know if I've talked about this before, because I don't want to be repetitive. I don't think I have. One of the things I've noticed is that there's shots that people are comfortable with, and then there's shots where people aren't comfortable with. And this is something that's been on my mind, so I wanted to talk about this, is that there are, let's just say I'm teaching a beginner to shoot a draw shot. And let's say that this person can comfortably hit the center of the ball. Maybe they can hit a little bit below center and generate a stop shot. And so if I ask them to hit a stop shot, they'll get down and shoot a stop shot, and their form will be relaxed and smooth, and their stroke will be smooth, and they'll be super fluid at the table. And then I'll tell them to lower their tip a little bit and shoot the same shot. And if I tell them to draw the ball back or see if they can back the ball up, it's amazing what happens is that all of a sudden they tense and they tighten, and you can see that all of a sudden they're like, their face is tight and they're clenching their jaw, and everything is just like different. And so I think I have mentioned this. I'll get to this part really short then, is that what I have them do is, it's so funny that if I tell them to draw the ball, how awkward and tight they get. But instead, what I do is if I have them shoot a stop shot, and then I tell them just lower the tip and shoot the same relaxed shot. Don't try to draw the ball. Just stay relaxed and smooth and shoot a stop shot with a lower tip position. Like, show me that you can stop the ball hitting lower, you know, because the fact is that if they use the same relaxed swing and cue lower on the cue ball, the ball has to come backwards.
Yeah, pretty much.
I'm like, you don't have to try to draw the ball in pool. You don't. The ball has no choice but to come back. You know, it's like if you drop a ball you know, if you pick up the cue ball and drop it, you don't have to try to have it hit the ground. You just have to let it go. And it's like the same idea. You don't have to try to draw the ball. You just have to cue low and use the same relaxed form. But as soon as people start thinking that they need to draw the ball, their brain tells them, I am trying to do something extra that I don't know if I can do. And the brain's like, I'll come to your rescue. The way that we're going to generate this extra draw that you need is by tightening up and involving 87 muscle groups. And so it's like what I found in that spot is that the way to teach people to get loose is to have them alternate between shooting shots they're comfortable with and then shots that are on the edge of their comfort zone, like lowering the tip position. And the goal is not to achieve some draw. The goal is to be able to consistently, you know, or to learn to hit shots that you're uncomfortable with your comfortable swing. And that can be a draw shot. That can be any shot, you know, certain shots you're not comfortable with. And I find this really interesting. You know, if you set up like, you know, a long cut shot, like maybe it's a spot to spot where they've got to shoot spot to spot. Maybe they're not comfortable with that shot. They don't feel like they can see the shot real well, or they don't feel like they're going to make the ball. But then if you put a nine ball hanging in one of the bottom corners and just tell them to combo with a nine, and now all of a sudden their margin of error triples, they feel like, oh, that shot looks easy now. And then they smooth out and relax, and their form is. So I'm like, look, when you shoot the spot to spot shot, even if you don't make it, see if you can shoot it as if you were like, how would you shoot this if you were confident that this ball was going in? Like, I know you might miss, but how would you shoot it if you knew 100% that this ball was going in? What would your stroke look like? How relaxed would you be? And I think a big part of pool is learning to get, you know, to shoot shots relaxed. And so a lot of what I do during practice is I find shots that are on the edge of where I start to tighten up, shots that are either difficult enough or awkward enough for whatever reason, that it causes me a little bit of anxiety or tension. And then I focus on shooting those shots relaxed and smooth and working on them. And if I need to alternate between moving it a little bit easier so I get a little bit more relaxed, and then trying to maintain that serenity on my next, you know, on my awkward shot, I think that that's a really good way to practice, is to try to smooth that stuff out.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. That sounds great. You have to be loose. You have to be relaxed to let your lower arm swing back and forth. And you have to kind of concentrate on it and not concentrate on it. It's like the subconscious thing that if you don't think about it, it'll work. But if you think about it, it won't.
Yeah.
It's kind of what you were talking about with the lower the tip, that your brain isn't thinking about it. You're just physically doing something different that your brain doesn't even have to think about.
Right. Oh, I know what I wanted to add too, Rob.
Yeah.
Is that this is a big deal for me. I'll tell you something that I've discovered a few years back, and boy, has this changed a lot for me. I like to play softer. I like to play like I'm a softer hit kind of guy. There's certain people that have a preferred swing speed that's like kind of powerful, like Jason Shaw or Mika Immonen. They really like that, you know, warp the balls in the hole. I've always been a guy that I like to, you know, I like to massage the balls in the hole. I mean, I don't necessarily always roll them, but I like to slide them into the hole. I like to, you know, I like to,
I don't like to
shoot real hard. And so when I have to shoot hard, my accuracy, you know, on certain types of hard shots has not been at the same level as these guys with these big power games. And I made a discovery a few years ago of something that has changed my game. And so it is a certain word. There is a word that I have removed from my vocabulary in terms of my mental vocabulary. And that word is hard. And I'll tell you, I used to think when I was at the table, I will tell you something. Whenever I think the word hard, I really don't perform well, because what happens is I tighten up my brain. What it does is it sends a message to my brain. My brain says, oh, you need hard. Let me help. And it ends up clenching all these muscles, which not only derails my accuracy, but it derails my fluidity, and so I can't accelerate the stroke smoothly and peak out my timing when I'm hitting the cue ball. Instead, I end up jerking my backstroke, lunging forward, muscling forward. The train jumps the tracks. I go off rail in terms of accuracy, and then my timing is off. And so I start really, really hard, end up hitting with a non, you know, and you can tell when somebody's timing is off because they start stroking really fast, but the actual cue ball reaction is not like they hit it that good.
Yeah.
So whenever I find myself thinking the word hard, I know something really bad is about to happen.
Yeah.
And so and the times that this would come out, if I was playing straight pool and I had a straight pool break shot, And I was like, maybe I have a little bit of a flat angle. And I'm like, ooh, I'm going to have to shoot this shot hard. Well, guess what? That didn't work. Or if I'm flat on a ball and I have to run a ball down the rail.
Just the word hard was enough. It doesn't matter what kind of hard.
And I'm telling you, these are the shots that came up. It's not only straight pull break shots, but if I was flat on a ball, if I'm nearly straight on a ball down the rail and I have to like stun firm and come off the rail and come out to the middle of the table, like those types of shots, I would end up, here's what I would do is I would end up rattling the ball out, try to cheat the pocket, and I would end up jerking my stroke and missing the shot.
Yep.
And so what I've learned to do, I refuse. If I ever hear the word hard come through my head, I say no. Nope. The only things I do, I shoot smooth, I can shoot firm. I can shoot smooth, I can shoot firm, but I can't shoot hard. And what I do on that shot where I'm shooting a ball down the rail and I need to stun one rail out to the middle of the table, I number one, I make sure I don't cheat the pocket. Because what happens is my brain, what it is, my brain is telling me, you can't do this. You're going to come up short. This is on, you know, you need to shoot hard. You need to cheat the pocket. My brain is trying to talk me into self-destruction. And so I have
too much information.
I have to stare my brain down and say, no, I'm not only am I not cheating the pocket, I'm going to shoot this ball on the full side of the pocket because I'm not going to be bullied into trying to miss this shot by steering the cue ball. And then the other thing I do is I say, I'm not going to shoot this shot hard. I actually shoot every shot soft. And what I mean by that is I start my stroke as if every shot's a soft shot. And then if I need to shoot firm, I shoot it soft and then just accelerate through the cue ball. So every shot, I visualize that shot full. I'm going to shoot this ball full in the pocket. I'm going to take my relaxed backswing. I'm going to start my swing as if I'm shooting it softly. And then I'm just going to go ahead and trust that my swing can swing and add enough acceleration to get the cue ball there. And you know what? Let me just tell you this. If I can't trust that my swing will get the cue ball, the cue speed I need to get the cue ball where I want it with a full hit and a soft, relaxed backswing, if I don't feel confident, then that's the wrong shot. Because if I commit to it and say, no, I can aim this ball full in the pocket, I can cue this softly, I can accelerate, and the cue ball will go where I want to go, I have to commit to that and trust in that. And if I can't commit to that and trust to that, then it's the wrong shot. I'm not going to get there by cheating the pocket and jerking my stroke and thinking I need to whack this ball hard. That's not going to work. So either I can get there with a smooth delivery and a smooth accelerating hit full into the pocket, or I'm picking something different. Yeah. So that has been a huge, huge change in my game. And I wanted to share it. Yeah.
I bet it did. Your ability now to pocket balls that are in stressful situations, you've relieved the whole source of that stress with that. Now your brain can let your body function without all the other information involved and getting in the way.
Series of situations where the table is going to present things that are either awkward, shots that you think you need to hit hard, shots that you think you need to do something extra to bank a ball or draw the ball or whatever. And it's going to be a never-ending series of situations that test you and bully you into thinking that having your brain engaged and thinking you need to do something extra. The way you're going to do something extra is by tensing muscles and jerking your backswing. And you have to continuously stare these situations in the eye and say, no, I refuse to tighten up. I refuse to jerk my swing. I refuse to try to help this shot. I am going to trust my stroke. And I'll tell you, the reason I'm such a fan of James Arratis is because if there's a guy out there that just does not get bullied by the table, even on the brace shots, even on firm shots. Notice I never say hard. Even on firm shots, he stays relaxed and he trusts his swing to do the work. And that's how I think pool. That's what I think the goal of pool should be. So that's what I wanted to add.
That's just such positive stuff. You're not letting any negativity get in your head when you're thinking like that. And your game is going to get better doing that. You're going to be more precise pocketing balls. And I was playing a month ago or so with a fella that he was just having a bad day pocketing. Okay. Pretty good player, but just wasn't. And he wasn't playing real good shape. So guess what? Now most of your shots are not simple. They're a little harder than simple. And I stopped him and I went, listen, I said, Jeremy, if you're going to think anything at all, think on every shot, easy shot, center hole. Okay, just real simple. Before you get down on the table, easy shot, center hole. Was it just two little simple thoughts? You're telling your brain this is not a hard shot. Okay, it's easy. Easy shot. And when you say center hole to yourself, out loud, easy shot, center hole. Now your focus is going to be at pocketing that ball in the middle of the pocket. And that's the last thing you say. So your brain's got, you're relaxed because it's easy shot, and now you're middle of the pocket, center hole. And all of a sudden, he started pocketing balls. And
I guess what I'm learning from this is that when you're playing somebody that's playing poorly, is it really a good idea to help them get in dead gear? I don't know.
It certainly helped him immediately. You know, when I saw was happening, there was too much shit getting in his head because his shape was a little out of whack.
What you gave him is great advice. You're a better man than I. I probably would have tried to raise the bat and, probably try to take
advantage. No, he did beat me, too. He beat me 7-1 then after that.
No, that's great advice. That's exactly right. I like that.
Yeah. So we can now jump into our tips. And, Rob, if you don't mind, I'll go first for this.
Go ahead.
So I kind of hinted earlier that Demetrius and I basically came up with my tip for today already. So I am going to just organize it into one concise thought right now. And that is the mechanics of your – basically all of your mechanics are super overrated. Demetrius has talked about this in the past. I agree with it completely. The only thing that is not overrated is your elbow. This is a very, very easy thing to do. And this is actually one of the first things I do when I'm working with – anybody from the college that I work with or just in general, is I get behind them and I get in front of them and I take pictures and slow motion videos directly from behind and directly in front. And what I do with that is I then show it to the person and I tell them and I ask them basically, is your elbow moving in a straight line? If your elbow is not moving in a straight line with your shaft of your playing cue, you probably want to try to change that. And you want to try to change it as soon as you possibly can. You don't want to be changing that when you're a 700 level player or even a 600 or even a 500 level player. I mean, as far as Fargo, you know, APA, you want to be changing this when you're like an APA 3, 420 to 480 level Fargo. You want to do it immediately. And I always say you want to do it immediately because you don't want to build a skyscraper on a poor foundation. You don't want to build a 75-story skyscraper on sand, because once anything that goes wrong in that skyscraper, you know, big gust of wind, an earthquake, there's nothing in your foundation that is actually going to be able to sustain what you've built on top of it. So what I mean by that is if something goes wrong, you're not seeing the balls well, you know, maybe you even have like your eyesight goes bad. I mean, you're maybe up there in age a little bit and your eyesight's going poorly. If you do not have your pool game built on a strong foundation, everything crumbles when you don't have the foundation set. So if you can build your game from a fundamental level as soon as possible using the proper mechanics, which we went on a discussion with this. I don't care how your legs are. I don't care how your shoulder is. The only thing that really is important is your elbow swinging through in the line of shot. So that'll be my tip this week, is to have somebody take a video from the front and somebody take a video from the back and make sure that when you're swinging your cue, it is all in the line of the shot so that you can really make sure that your game is built on good foundations and good fundamentals, so that if something does go wrong, you have more of a foundation to fall back on for any part of your game. So you're not really falling off a long ways. You're just, you know, struggling instead of falling apart.
Beautiful. Can't argue with that.
Rob, do you want to go next?
Nice tip, Nate. Yeah, I'm going to just say one quick thing about breaking. And I had a instruction years ago, back in 1980 with Nick Varner in a tournament I went to, he was in it, and he talked about breaking a little bit. His main point in breaking was being able to get the tip of the stick during the break and pretty much the center or slightly below the center of the cue ball consistently, and as being a very important factor. And I just watched the other day a thing with Daryl Appleton, who said basically the same thing. He said, on a normal pool shot, you're probably eyeing the object ball where you want to hit it, or your line on the object ball. The last thing you do before you actually strike it, your eyes are focused on in that area, the object ball. And he said, in breaking, it's just the opposite. And this echoes what Nick Varner had said to me 30 years ago. You know, if you concentrate on where you're hitting that cue ball, that's just slightly more important than where you're hitting the object ball on the break. So that consistency, having very little spin on that ball after you know, stroke it through. So I'm just going to repeat that and say, look at the object ball and pretty much the level of your stick. I think Nick had said too, he says the more level the stick is, the better off you are. Now you see the guys breaking hard, not control break, but a hard break. Sometimes they raise up a little bit while they're going into that break. And so it's not perfectly level, but hitting the cue ball in the right spot is pretty darn important on the break. That's my tip.
It is everything on the break.
Yeah.
Yeah. So with that, Demetrius, unless you have something to add to either of those, we will go into your coach's corner.
Yeah, those are both great tips. I endorse 100%. Thank you for sharing. And yeah, with that, I'm happy to kick off another edition of the Coach's Corner. This is the part of the podcast where I, Demetrius Gelatis, get to try to help you guys take your pool game to the next level. I have been doing that one-on-one with students that fly out to Minnesota and train with me. More information, www.mnpoolbootcamp.com. It's been a lot of fun. So today I want to talk a little bit about goals, and I think I'm going to make this a two-parter because I think today I want to talk a little bit. I want to introduce something that I call the commander and the soldier, or the captain and the soldier, I guess I could call it. I want to talk a little bit about different kinds of goals and what the best way to put them together is. And then I think next week I want to get back to it and talk a little bit about some common mistakes people make that interfere with their ability to perform. So with that, I'll just say, you know, I think that some people know this, but a lot of people don't really know the different kinds of goals and which are good in which spots. It's almost like different types of size spin or knowing the right pattern to play. So when I think of goals, there are long-term result goals that you can have where, you know, maybe you want to get to where you're the best player in your league, or maybe you want to get to where you win a local tournament against some of the top local players, or maybe you want to cash in a pro event, or you want to run 100 balls in straight pool. These are examples of result goals. You know, these are results that you would like to achieve with your pool game. And those are important because you have to have a picture of where you want to go. The problem comes with if you're playing a game of pool and you're focused on results, that creates a lot of pressure and it can interfere with performance. And the reason for that is because the result goals are not within your short-term control. So when you're at the table, I guess you could divide things into categories of what you can control and what you can't control. And what you can control at the table are things like, you know, breathing and things like making good decisions or how much effort you give or what your attitude is or how you react to the adversity in front of you, different things like that. But you can't control whether you make balls in the break, whether you run out every table, whether you win the match. You certainly can't control what your opponent does or, you know, how they play, some of the things that happen. And you can't really control the results of that match. So one problem is when people are really focused on results. I really want to beat this guy. I really want to win. This is my time. I want to win this tournament. When you're really focused on results, because that's not in your control, when you give a lot of emotional attachment to something outside of your control, it creates anxiety and it creates doubt and fear and frustration. It doesn't lead itself to a great performance. It might be motivating. You might be fired up to play hard, but ultimately it's like, it's just not good. You're like, I want this stuff. It's almost like when you're, I don't know about you guys listening, but for me, when I'm watching somebody else play pool, I get more nervous than when I'm playing myself, because when you're watching somebody else play pool, you have zero control over what they're going to do. You know, like my daughter would be playing in leagues and I'd be watching her games and I'd just be sitting there and I'm helpless. I don't know if she's going to shoot the right shot. I don't know if she's going to follow the eight ball in. So it's like when you're the same way, when you're focused on things out of your control, it makes you anxious. And so as opposed to result goals, we have what we call process goals. And those are the things I mentioned that are entirely in your control in the short term. So whether it's, you know, hey, I want to make sure I'm using a smooth stroke at every shot, or I want to make sure that I'm going through my pre-shot routine. Whatever your process goals are, things that you can absolutely control. And they may not control the result, because nothing can control the result short term, but you can at least give yourself the best chance. You can influence to your fullest. You can influence the outcome of that match. And so again, you've got process goals or things you can control in the short term. And that's where your focus should be when you're competing. And then that takes a lot of pressure off. You know, when you're no longer saying, I need to win this match, I have to beat this guy, I have to win this tournament. It's like, no, you can't control that. That creates pressure. You focus on your processes, and that creates confidence, because you can actually influence that. Interesting note, I had a student ask me about pocketing balls. He says, well, you can control that. That's in your control. And we had a very cool conversation about whether or not pocketing balls was in your control. He was of the camp that it was, and I'm more of the camp that you actually can't control pocketing balls, because if you could, then you'd pocket them every time. And it's an interesting conversation, but I don't think it is. I think that you should be focused on things that are process-based, meaning what you're trying, you know, your effort, your attitude, your stroke, your breathing, your pre-shot routine, your decision-making. Those types of things are good process goals. So then I've seen people get really, really excited about that. Like, hey, process goals are the best. You know, I just want to not be result-oriented. I want to focus on processes, because if I can do those processes right, then the great things will happen for me. But you still need result goals, because otherwise, if you don't have result goals, what are those processes for? And how do you make sure that you have the right processes? If you don't have an external benchmark to measure against, you can sit there and be, you know, process minded all day. But if in a year, 2 years, 3 years, if you're not hitting goals and getting better, then what are the processes being built to do, and how do you know if they're working? You have to have result goals to have a vision that you're driving towards, so that you give structure to what you're trying to build with your processes. And so one analogy I use to kind of help people with this is, nowadays we have GPS. So let's go back in time to when we used road. When I grew up, we used road atlases. If I wanted to drive to a tournament in Louisville, Kentucky for Derby, I would get out my road atlas and I'd say, okay, here's where I'm at. Here's where I want to drive to. And so before I drove, I would map out my road. I would say, well, I'm going to be on this highway for 150 miles. So I know that once I'm in my car for a few hours, then I'll have to be starting to look out for this other highway. But now that I have a general route planned, guess what I'm going to do? When I get in my car, I'm putting away the road atlas and I'm going to focus on the car in front of me, staying in my lane, the speedometer, the gas gauge, things like that. What I'm not going to be doing is driving in my car with the road atlas open and in between me and the windshield. I'm staring at the road saying, am I there yet? Am I there yet? Because if I'm staring at that atlas, asking myself if I'm there yet, there's a very good chance that I will hit the car in front of me or go off the road. And so you can't be driving with the atlas in your face. When you're driving, you need to be focused on operating the car and trust that as long as you mapped out your road right, you will get there. On the other hand, you can't. So that would be the example of focusing on process goals. You know, so you can't play a match thinking about, are you going to hit your goals? Is this going to be your breakthrough tournament? Are you ever going to run 100 balls in straight pool? Is this your time? I need to get there today. Like, all those types of result thoughts are like having the atlas in front of your face when you're trying to drive. You can't be thinking about all that. You have to be focused on the here and now and the process of what you're trying to do. On the other hand, if you don't have result goals that you're laser focused on and hungry to hit, that would be like me getting in the car without having consulted the atlas and just saying, well, I'm not going to be one of these result guys that has the atlas in my face. I'm not going to be the sucker that crashes because I'm staring at the atlas. I'll just jump in my car and drive and play some good music and drive around and feel good and be intuitive. And I'm sure, you know, it's a small country. I'm sure I'll end up in Louisville at some point. Like, no, it's a very big country, and the odds of you getting where you want to go without having a clear vision and path to get there are almost none. So, yes, in the big picture, in the long term, results are very important, and you have to set your clear targets, map out a way to get there, build a plan to get there. And then once you've built that plan, once you screw your queue together, you have to be focused on the processes. You know, so long term, you build out your goal, but you also build out what processes am I going to execute, and what, both on the table and managing my career in terms of tournaments I play, number of opportunities, people I play, practice I do. You map it all out. You figure out how it's going to get there. And then once you put your queue together, you focus on the things on the table. And then you have to go process only at that point. Once you put your queue together, results are out of the picture, because they're only going to derail you from the here and now and the things you can control, the things that build confidence, and the things that will actually propel you towards that success. And so I talk about this mix of long-term and short-term. As we get into next week, I'll talk about the captain and the soldier. The captain is the guy that sets the long-term plans. The soldier is the person fighting the short-term battles. And what I want to talk about next week is the relationship between the two and some of the many mistakes I've seen people make that derail their performance, either in the short term or in their career, because they don't really understand some of, if you have a dysfunctional relationship between your long-term goals and your short-term goals, then that's where you see a lot of problems. So this week I wanted to set it up by making sure everyone knew what, long-term goals look like, what short-term goals look like. Process versus results. Results, long-term, out of your control. Short-term is process, completely in your control. And if you kind of have that picture of the road atlas and the driver, then as we get in next week, I can talk about some of the areas where I've seen people break down and some of the things you can do to make sure these things are working for you so that you're motivated, focused, and delivering your best foot forward to actually make progress towards your goals. So once again, I appreciate it. And if you have questions, feel free to email me info@mnpoolbootcamp.com. I love it. Thanks for supporting the podcast, and talk to you guys next week.
Yeah. Coach, thanks very much.
Yep, sounds good. I echo everything that you said. I think it's good to separate those two, and you definitely want to have short-term goals that complement your long-term goals. I agree with that completely. So that was a great explanation for it.
Yeah, cool. It sounds like what folks in AA tried to do. Long-term goals, have a good life. Short-term goals, stay sober today.
Well, and it's actually, you know what, one thing that you mentioned is absolutely true, is when you talk about the serenity prayer, you know, grant me the courage to change, the serenity to accept the things I can't change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Like, these are not new ideas. You need to know the things that you can actually influence, the things that you can make a difference on. Those are the things that you have to fight and you have to bring a lot of fire to. And that the things that you can't control, you have to be able to accept and not let that derail you. And then you have to know which is which. And so for me, these are not new ideas. This is just really trying to look at what that means on a pool table. So
yeah, you know, when you talked, one of them, of course, you mentioned was breathing. And I really like that one. Because when we do get under stress, what do? We stop breathing. And if you're a golfer, you notice it when you're on the green and you're ready to putt. All of a sudden, you're holding your breath. Well, don't do that. And that is in our control. We can't control that. Control our breathing. It helps. Every amateur out there, if you control your breathing while you're playing, it will help you.
And when you make your goal that I'm going to make good decisions, that I'm going to make sure I take a breath before I shoot, like if that's your goal, then it gives you a lot of confidence. Like, hey, I could do that.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're like, you need to beat this guy. Yeah, when you say, I have to beat this guy, I have to make this shot, well, it's like, I don't know if I can do that. So you start breathing a little tighter. But
I need another run out. Yeah, right?
You got it. You got
your
it.
Chances. You're cutting your chances down saying that. But.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a good place to leave the discussion. And until next week, thanks again for joining me, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Nate. Thanks, listeners.
Hey everyone, thanks again for listening. If you like what you've heard and you listen through iTunes, please subscribe and leave a rating. It helps others find the podcast. As always, thank you to our sponsors, Jacoby Custom Cues, Cody's Cue Therapy, Jeff Glaz's CBD for Life Global, the Wisconsin Billiards Hall of Fame, the Rocks Sports Bar and Grill, the IQ Practice Cue Ball, and the Wisconsin Pool Player Society. If you like what you hear, consider supporting the people who support the podcast. I would also like to take this time to thank Matt Kitzman, Robert Miller, Natasha, Kurt Elliott, Scott Doolian, Corey Smith, William Sutherland, and Mike Teasy for their help to market the podcast to a larger audience. Lastly, I would like to thank my cousin Andrew Mindham for his band Hey Captain Knight's music as segment and filler music to the podcast. If you like what you hear, you can find all of his music at heycaptainknight.bandcamp.com. And Knight is K-N-I-G-H-T.